Our text for today has inspired a lot of hymns, including the one we just sang, and many, many others. Preached, I talked about how Mennonites don't build temples the way other denominations do, to build grand buildings. But we do make a kind of temple with our music. We build this thing that somehow holds our worship when we sing together. Our voices echo the angels who were singing in God's presence, holy, holy. And in this case, we've called each other into worship. We're inviting each other to the way the seraphim called out to each other. In that same story about Solomon's temple, I also talked about how Mennonites gather at conventions, and when like that singing together at conventions is just like, it's just like nothing else. That rush of 1,000 voices lifted in song it's a mighty connection to the divine. I wonder, he's just blown away. And I love like his response to God when he says, "Mourn for me, I'm ruined." This holy experience is just, he's coming overwhelmed, and the enormity of God's presence and God's majesty. Like Solomon building the temple, Isaiah understands God, that the grandeur of the God of Israel cannot be contained. In fact, I kind of just love this image of that God is so, it's just the hem of God's robe that fills up the temple. I love imagining the vastness of a garment that covers the whole universe and extends along with smoke and these creatures flying all around and burning coals. Like, what an experience. I wonder if this is why some, in some sort of, I mean, I think of them as fancy churches, have incense. And so you get that experience of the smoke and the smell and, you know, the bells and smells it may awe and joy at this encounter. It's like, send me. And he doesn't even know what the calling is to. He doesn't know what God is going to ask of him, but he says immediately, me. And maybe he thinks that whatever he's saying yes to, that will extend this experience divine. Maybe he will be able to return to that holy, holy, holy presence of God. I think maybe because it's so inspired by hymns, like there, when I was looking for hymns and about like that connected to this text that talked about God's holiness and God's beauty, I wonder if because of that, this text is quite familiar. And also because of that, it almost always stops at the send me part. We almost never hear the part that comes afterwards. It's like we want to stop at the happily ever after in the fairy tale. We don't want to hear about. And that's life. There's always more story to come in life. Life doesn't stop at the wedding. We also never really know what's going to be involved when we say yes to something. Never. You don't know, for example, or fully understand when you say yes to the call to be a pastor, that it might mean fixing the toilet, as it has for Pastor Ryan in this church, or doing dishes, or cleaning storm drains, or getting yelled at by angry neighbors, which is something I have had to do. You don't know or really understand when wedding vows that marriage might bring, or extended illnesses and caregiving. But that is a part of the long story of saying yes. We say yes to these callings because of the romance and the beauty of what we're experiencing in that moment, because of the love we have for a person or for a people or for the calling itself. And there in the temple, Isaiah is already with his yes. He's ran away not once, but three times, literally ran away from the idea of calling. But here, Isaiah's all in. But his yes comes in a context, not just of the holiness of that temple, but that encounter is time-stamped right off the top, but the bigger political context. In the year of King Uzziah's death, I saw the Lord. And maybe you won't be surprised that in the year of a king's death, that means a lot of political transition, a lot of transition in what's happening in that community, a lot of upheaval for a kingdom. A people has lost a leader. They're resetting to follow someone else, new ideas about what leadership, really uncertain about the future. And not only that, Uzziah has reigned for 50 years. 50 years of stability and a king who has been benevolent and kind. That's a really long time in any age, but when lifespans were more unexpected, they have a king. I mean, that's a generation. A king has ruled for a generation and been well loved, and people will grieve, and leadership is going to be tested. That kind of grief and chaos sounds a little bit familiar, you know. But that kind of transition and instability and uncertainty and even fear. When I met with the Washington Pastors Group, this who's the pastor at Community of Hope in Bellingham, she shared her fear herself and the members of her community. She has a child who's non-binary. And a non-binary child in Bellingham was recently assaulted by members of and identification. And Pastor Rachel is walking with a trans person in her congregation who is making plans to leave the country because they feel so unsafe. Now, many people who are very, very vulnerable. There are some folks. We talked this morning in Sunday school about how it's hard to identify. But there are some folks who are desperately hopeful that in a new administration, there will be a change that will lead to more prosperity, for hope, for well-being after struggling to even pay for essentials. People hoping that the change will mean more money in their pockets. There's a lot of fear going around. How are we called as individuals and as community? Isaiah's calling is essentially to proclaim to his people that they are about to experience a period of judgment. I don't like to preach about God's judgment. But Isaiah is being called to preach to his people, and they are not going to understand, they're not going to turn, and they are not going to receive mercy. And Isaiah laments, how long? Which is both a literal question on his behalf, like, how long do I have to say this? Like, how long do I have to pain? But also, like the psalmist, it's a just a mournful cry. It is a cry of his grief. But his grief does not turn him away from his calling, and he doesn't say, I'm out. Nope, I can't do it. Or, well, take it back. I spoke too soon. He doesn't run away like Jonah ran away. He doesn't say, don't send me after all. Just kidding. I was caught up in the moment. He shares the word that has been given to him. He searches for hope. And the book of Isaiah position of chaos and hope. Probably a lot of us who are feeling pretty mournful, who are set pretty well. A picture. We live in a country that's almost evenly divided. Our neighbors and even families. We share families with people who think differently than we do. But I hear the fear of Pastor Rachel and the people she works with, especially, and I am fearful. I am also resolute. This is the word that came to me on election day when I was at the Grunewald Guild gathered with evening all together. And on election night, the spiritual director who was asked everyone to name what they were feeling about the what they were feeling and call out those words. And people named things like fear and anxiety and worry and frustration and grief. But even then, the word that I had was resolute. I didn't say mine out loud, actually. I didn't say that word out loud because it seemed to me that there was an expectation that. And I had some of that. Resolute, determined. I felt called in the face of whatever chaos was would come, will come. Pastor Rachel also shared a quote with me from author Rebecca Solnit, who posted this on X after the election. I don't even want to call it X, it's so annoying. Posted this on X after the election. She writes, "The Wobblies," which I had to look up, it's a labor union organization from like, I'm sure no,
Really?
I did not. The Wobblies, you mourn, organize. But you can do both at once. Away in this moment of furious mourning, you can be heartbroken or furious or both at once. You can scream in your car or on a cliff. You can also get up tomorrow and water the flower pots and call someone who's upset and check your equipment for going onward. Cutter undirected. Metaphysical ones that are heart and soul and care, as well as the practical ones. People kept the faith in dictatorships of South America in the 1970s and 80s, in the East Bloc countries and the USSR. Women are protesting right now. They are writing poetry. There is no alternative to persevering, and that does not require you to feel good. You can keep walking whether it's sunny or raining. That line stuck with me. There is no alternative to persevering. In persevering. And not only in persevering, but in doing it together. Solnit talked about the people who are writing poetry while beauty is around. It is the meeting with the divine that will continue to hold us in chaos. It will be hard. When Isaiah asks how long, God says, until the cities lie ruined with no one in them, until there are houses with people and the land is devastated, or houses without people. And yet there are faithful and righteous folks who remain, who did remain. Relationship with God and God's people. They will not be exempt from the ruin and they will experience it all together. They will get burned and they will be in community. And we Mennonites, we individuals, we faithful, we are called into this chaos to be in relationships, to continue to love those who speak differently. And love differently, to speak for those whose voices are muted or muffled, to stand with those who are pushed to the margins. It will be hard. It might be chaotic, but we are called. And I, in particular, I'm still resonant. We are called, and may we be faithful to that call. Amen.